Cliff Central.
The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.
Download the Cliff Central app. Available now on the Apple App Store and Google Play Store.
Choice. Sometimes you have it, and sometimes you don't. AutoTrader gives you the choice. Now you can shop, compare, and buy new cars. Watch our expert video reviews and research before you buy. AutoTrader New Car. The choice is yours.
There we go. Welcome. Yeah, it's that time. Everybody's sparking in the studio. Quickly get the headphones on. Drama, drama, drama.
Okay, these ones don't actually fit.
You got them on backwards, that's why.
Do I?
Yes, oh, try again. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, it is Auto Central, proudly brought to you by autotrader.co.za, your trusted motoring marketplace. I'd like to welcome you to it. If you want to get involved and join in on the conversation, please do hit us up on Twitter, primarily Twitter, and that's at AutoTraderSA, and use the hashtag AutoCentral. It is your weekly motoring show with myself, Chad Lukoff, and Vilmarie Jansen van Rensburg.
SA Speed Queen.
At SA Speed Queen, if you're wanting to chat to her. Mine's at Chad Lukoff. It's kind of tricky, but hey, search for it, you should find it. And we are joined in studio by our guest, Dave Griffin. Welcome, Dave. How are you doing?
Yeah, great. Thank you, guys. Thanks for the invite.
I saw the nice bike downstairs. Did he come before?
Yeah, he was here just before me. Yeah.
Okay, so you saw.
Yeah, no, I did see it coming.
That was one of my favorites, by the way.
Really, hey?
Yeah, I did talk about it. You remember? That's the one.
No, we were listening.
Mm. Oh, okay, there we go. So a little bit of support, a little bit of love there. Nothing wrong, nothing wrong. Yeah, Dave Griffin, you are, of course, CEO of Radmoto.
KTM. DP, yeah, Radmoto.
DP, there we go, dealer principal.
My bad.
Okay, well, let's not get it wrong here. Well, we'd like to welcome you to the show. Nice to have you here. I've heard many things about you, and, to meet the man now, absolute pleasure.
Well, thank you, guys. Yeah, Radmoto started in 2011. Being depicted by road, adventure, and dirt. And that really sums up what we do at our business. We focus on road, adventure, and dirt, from racing to adventure riding to motocross and enduro.
What does RAD stand for, gang? You've told me.
Road, adventure, and dirt.
Got it. But you do more than just dirt. Yeah, it's okay, road. There we go. Nice. That was a blonde moment. So. Shut up, Chad. I know. I could see you enjoying it.
Maybe a little too much. Maybe a little too much.
Okay, road, adventure, and dirt.
And dirt, yeah.
And you do this every day, all day, 7 days a week.
Yeah, not many people get to live within their passion, so I guess I land with my bum firmly in the butter, and I get to do what I love every single day of my life.
I actually think the three of us sitting here are of those very, very fortunate. Yeah. Where we sit there and day in and day out, we're essentially working our hobbies and, you know, we're getting paid to do it. And to talk about it, yeah. I mean, I love talking. I mean, I've been doing the commentary thing for so many years, so I've just been paid to talk and to speak my mind, and I don't know that it gets much better than that. So is it better on your side?
Well, you know, I haven't seen my dogs in about 6 weeks. I don't know what my house looks like, and I haven't driven a car since I can last remember. But no, I love what I do. Absolutely adore it.
Why 6 weeks? Where have you been?
Oh, we just came back from Mozambique from the LDBA and the Prawn Run. That was a week-long event.
Prawn Run?
Yeah, phenomenal event run by Rika de Brain and Mark Taylor and Treffen Smith.
So what's that about?
Well, effectively what we do is we take 180 passionate adventure riders from BMWs and Triumphs and Yamahas and, of course, KTMs. And we meet at a place in Hazyview, Hippo Hollow. Mm-hmm. And we spend 3 days of riding the most unbelievable terrain.
In
Nelspruit, Hazyview, Sabi. Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's a beautiful part of the world. It's of my favorite. Mm-hmm. You know, give me that over the beach any day.
100%, yeah. But we get the best of both worlds. So we get to spend 3 days riding there. Mm-hmm. And then we pack up on Sunday and head off to Mozambique for 2 days.
Mm. Wow. Okay, so that's called the Prawn Run. So is it a whole lot of adventure riders being called the
Only adventure run. Bikes. There are a couple of ladies that ride 500s and 450s. Mm-hmm. Strange enough, the 7'4" type are the biggest ones that are not on the bigger adventure bikes, but we get GSs out on the beach. We get 1190s. It's amazing.
So it's 2 days on the beach?
2 days Monday and Tuesday we head home.
Gee.
But it's intense riding. It's not casual riding. You've got to be
experienced. No. There's three various routes you can take. You can take a green, a black, or a red. Mm-hmm. The black being the more difficult. The green being good tour spur roads or national roads, just dirt roads. And red is slightly challenging, but you can do it two up. No problem at all.
For the experienced. One you might lose along the way, but lose any weight?
No, not at all. We were discussing that earlier, and I think that's a big misconception, that adventure riding is very difficult and tough. Mm. I think if one looks at an adventure bike at 240 kgs, the last thing you want to do is drop that. the mere thought of dropping that in a car park would make you shiver.
Yes, yeah.
So now imagine doing it on the side of a cliff when you've got dirt all around you. So one needs to take that misconception and put it aside and say, well, that's not what adventure bike is about. Mm. Adventure bike is about meeting people. It's about going places that a car necessarily won't get you and to see views that you're never going to see again, not even by foot.
That's so important, though, hey? Because people don't know that.
It is. And I mean, I just want to rewind a little bit here because I think many people that may have encountered, you know, Rad Moto or passed it on the highway and that you guys are clearly visible from the N1, on the misconception that it's just basically a KTM bike and accessories store. But you guys are so much more than that, aren't you?
100%. And our accessories now have pretty much taken over half of our business. Okay. They used to be a very small part. I think being the leaders in the adventure market and the road market, people have come to us for advice, and we carry the best of the best, both from a price point of view and from a protection point of view. And you're going to get good information when you get there. The guys we hire all know what they're doing. They're ex-racers, and they're very skilled.
I was just going to say, yeah. Mm, mostly ex-racers, yeah.
You know, and then we don't just carry KTMs. We also carry a Royal Enfield brand.
Okay.
KTM, obviously, being a niche market, latest technology, doesn't have a classic bike. Mm-hmm. We then adopted the Royal Enfield as our classic bike, which is a beautiful little machine. Excuse me. So, yeah, we're not just a KTM dealership. We also do used bikes.
Okay.
And we'll trade anything in, and we'll gladly facilitate a move from one brand to another.
Ideally, if it's moving to something orange. Moving to a traffic cone. No, that was nasty. I'll take that one back. I'll take that one back. But on top of that, I mean, you guys also, you guys arrange tours and you do a little bit of training in that, I believe, as well, in terms of these adventure rides and social gatherings and festivals and that type of thing. So it's not just about the hardware. It's about the lifestyle, in fact.
100%. And you'll see us at pretty much every event throughout the year. We have one major event every month, and then we do a training event at least once a month. And each event will gear you. So we'll do a weekend ride, and we'll gauge your riding ability within that weekend ride.
Yeah.
From there, we'd advise that you can go see someone like Vilmary for rider training, mm-hmm. or someone like Andrew Barham. They can do some rider training with you, and only to make you more confident. You know, we can teach so much on a ride, but it's difficult when there's 20 or 30 people.
Absolutely, yes.
Whereas we've got specialized people that do enhance people's riding ability.
Especially, I suppose, if you spot one that really needs it desperate, because it puts everyone in danger. And you don't want Chad sticking up his hand. Excuse me, you are learning.
I am. Slowly. Slowly.
Not at all.
I mean, we went through the processes there, and it's been a long time since I've been that nervous, believe it or not.
Well, you didn't show. Which one is this? The license one?
The K53. I mean, we're talking about it. We are. And it's no secret. George and myself are going through the process of learning to ride and that. And it is all going to be documented. And we went and we sat and we did the K53 yard work with Vilmary. And I found it so daunting. It was.
It's like suddenly I'm an instructor.
It was almost like you, not the instructor, you were the examiner. Yeah. It was like that bad. I was like, no, why am I? I know how to do this. Come on, you. And it was just—it's nerve-wracking. So, it of the toughest work that I've done on the training so far. Where the rest of it is, you know, go and just get it done. This is X, Y, and Z, and there are certain steps to follow, and you have to nail them. Mm. And in very short spaces, I'm like, I can't think this fast. I need to practice thinking process quicker. Process it, yeah.
But so, we were saying, you know, I mean, do you experience that too, Dave, that people think firstly they can buy, they don't need training, or for license, they also don't need license training. So they just go and get it or fail or buy a bike and then hurt themselves.
Our biggest problem with any rider is the ego.
Mm-hmm.
The ego is your worst enemy, believing that you're better than anybody else, or that you don't want to take a back seat and be told something or shown something or educate yourself. So that is the biggest problem we see, is ego, 9 times out of 10.
Yeah, because, I mean, we hear about all these accidents and that, and people think, oh, bikes are dangerous. For me, it's to an extent, it could be, if you don't follow the safety steps in that, like we're saying, or if your ego gets in the way.
You know, I've been riding for, sure, I don't want to give my age away here, but I've been riding for a long, long time.
We all do often.
We all do. We do it on a regular basis. It's the midlife crew here.
And I've probably had about...
Over here. I'm just from this microphone, I'll defend you, Vilmary.
I think I've probably had about 6 big accidents in my life. And every single one I can only attribute to my own fault, irrespective of who did what and how they did it. I was either going too fast, or I wasn't paying attention, or I didn't allow for something to happen that could have happened.
You're saying it was avoidable in essence?
100%.
I'm very curious then about that fascinating bruise that's on you now.
Yeah, you are. You walked in here. I'm sorry. We're going to say it. You walked in here a little gimpy with a bit of a limp and that. And then
now that you've said it, you can't blame anyone else.
No, you can't. You can't. And if you want to be manured on the beach and at 120 on a 990, which weighs 230 kgs, then you need to expect that there's a good opportunity for you to fall off.
Okay. And I mean, you're an experienced rider.
Yes.
Very experienced. So what went wrong?
In all honesty, I think I overlooked the point of letting down my tires to give me a little bit more traction on the road. And
this is a bitch. Did I say that? I didn't mean
it. It's uncensored radio. You're pretty fine here, Vilmarie, but well done.
I mean, I do apologize.
You'd like to extend that beach?
I mean, it's a big technical issue.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. All right. Lovely shade of peace. Shirt matches face. of course, Dave is, for those that do not have a webcam in here, Dave is, of course, wearing his trademark KTM orange, and Vilmarie is now matching.
The same color.
Matching, yeah.
You were saying, okay, that's a big technical thing. So, and I mean...
Yeah, letting down tires on the beach is a must. Any vehicle that goes on the beach will tell you they have to let the tires down. And I did tell a few people to do exactly what I didn't do. And
lovely.
It's a case of do as I say, don't do as I do.
100%. Beach riding is much like surfing or skiing behind a boat. You need to get to a certain speed where you're planing on top of the sand. Mm. The hardship is when riding below the water mark, the high water mark, your terrain changes.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And if the water just come away from there, it tends to be quite soft and sloppy. And that's what got the better of me. And I should have known better. And I didn't.
So you actually came down on quite hard pack.
Well, did you see his chest?
No, I saw that, but I thought, you know, that sitting with, 230-kilogram R90 bike, that could be the result of a bike falling with you. But I didn't realize. I thought you may have fallen into softer dune sand. If it's on the hard pack stuff, then I really do feel for you.
I don't think the sand's the problem. It's the bike, generally.
It's a sudden
if you
stop.
Stay with it.
Generally, the bike stops and you carry on into the bike, and then you both tumble a couple of times.
Yeah.
Is that what happened? Mm. Okay, I'm going to take a pic of that bruise just now. Mm-mm. I'll keep your face out of it.
It is a winner. No,
that's a good one.
We actually joke in the shop that we're not allowed to show signs of injury because people come into the shop and say, but if you're crashing, then what hope do I stand of not crashing? And we kind of go, well, you know, misunderstand. There's different parameters
that
we work within here.
Anybody can come off.
Yeah,
you know, it's just the question of, well, like you say, that ego.
But it just proves to me what I'm trying to say is that you – I mean, if you're an inexperienced rider, why on earth would you think you don't need training? Someone like you is experienced. You keep, and me included, we keep training and growing. You can never, never, ever have the attitude, whether you're in a car or bike, but especially a bike, that you don't need to learn anything else.
Need instruction, yeah, that you know
you
everything.
Need, yeah.
So, I mean, from both of you who are experienced, Dave, you racing, correct? You do race.
Yeah.
You race what, Enduro Series or?
No, I used to race superbikes.
Okay.
In 2009, 10, 11.
Okay.
More recently, I've been doing the off-road thing, so the rally, like a Dakar type rally.
Yes, okay, yeah, off-road series.
And we introduced a new series beginning of last year, called the RC390 series, which is a little road bike, which was a great deal of fun to race.
Okay. All right, so you're both experienced racers. You guys have got serious track time. You guys have finished well. You've come off as well. In an experienced rider's point, from an experienced rider's point of view, would you say that you could still benefit from training with somebody else?
Always.
Without a doubt.
Always.
Okay, so there we go. For those listening, even if you are experienced, go get some training. It may not teach you everything. You may not
one
find
thing
the entire
can save
thing
your life.
Beneficial, but yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. I think there's always that little hidden gem that somebody else has experienced that you haven't necessarily experienced or encountered that you know, may just plant itself in the back of your mind and save you when the time comes.
Well, you know what? I mean, it is, but I'm going to at the same time say this, and I'm sure Dave will agree, that choose who you learn from.
Also true, yeah.
Because that could be either a plus or a negative for you. You know what I mean? Don't just go to anyone or husband, and I'm saying this with the most respect, okay, husband or boyfriend or fiance to teach you, because, and especially for entry-level, new in the industry type of people, they're probably the worst people to learn from. Go to an expert.
Is that just because you're learning all their bad habits?
Correct.
Or?
And okay. And most of, again, like Dave was saying earlier, you have ego driving there. You don't have experience. It's two very different things. It teaches you the wrong stuff and could get you into trouble. So take some time, take some money, and go learn with the right people. And I mean, if you don't know, someone like Rad would know where to send you.
And I was chatting to Dave about it, and it's pleasantly surprising to see that the training actually isn't that expensive. Mm. What you're going to spend on your helmet and jacket, if you spend half of that, yeah. if you spend half of that on training, you're well on your way to getting, you know, a good foundation going.
Correct. What do you guys do, Dave, to grow your, call it your, what is it, your groups, your social group, your following from bum to seat?
So I think we started when I first joined RAD was the night ride. Every Thursday night on the new month, we'd go for a ride. And that became a social thing. People like to ride with like-minded people.
I've heard about that, and it actually seems to be quite popular, in fact.
Mm. Yeah, it's incredibly fun. And it's growing in numbers. It now runs out of Nelspruit, out of Bloem, and out of Durban.
Wow.
Okay. And Cape Town. So it's gone national now through Superbike magazine. They've taken it national.
Stunning.
So that's the one thing we do. And I've always believed, get people riding. Encourage people to come and ride. Let them meet like-minded people on your rides, and they will in turn ride on their own. They won't always have to ride with you.
Okay.
And like with the LDBA now, we see 170 people come together. And these are groups of friends that have ridden over the years that now want to ride together. And I suspect in the next year, you're going to see that up at 300, 400 people riding. Because that's where it's going towards.
Now, just in terms of a social aspect, in terms of a social gathering in that, are you saying you're going to expect those numbers? Or do you think we're going to see an increase in the number of commuters?
I'm seeing an exponential growth just from the commuting market. We've mm-hmm. seen some of the entry-level bikes coming as commuters, but more so, you know, the old GS guys that would not ride off-road on their bikes, so they'd purely go from home to work and back again.
Yeah.
They're now saying, geez, we've got these things. Why aren't we using them?
Utilize it, actually.
Yeah, and then they use them once or twice, and they hit a bit of sand, and they break a collarbone, and they go, oh, you see, now that's why I didn't do it. I'm saying, but wait, what training did you undertake? Mm. What tires are you running? Are you riding the bike properly? You know, it's nice to look at all these pictures on Facebook, and that's aspirational, and geez, you want to live that lifestyle. But you can't just jump into it. You need to study and sort of do the groundwork to get you there safely.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily a huge amount of training for that. It's basics in terms of just which brake to use or not to use, or how to stand when you have to stand up, or like you were saying, tire pressures, you know, those kind of things.
Yeah, small little things.
That people should do because it's a whole nother lifestyle.
Yeah. Mm.
Now, I'm intrigued by this night ride. What happens on one of these sort of night rides? I've heard it's quite a social affair, but the average guy that's looking to get involved and possibly join.
No drinking.
Yes, no drinking. No.
Well, I mean, that's an old staple. Throttle and bottle don't mix. So
some think they do.
Some think they do. Yes, no, there are a number of rallies that'll argue that point.
Well, generally, what happens is each dealership. I think Yamaha has been involved. I think Honda, mm-hmm. Ducati, they've all done their own sort of night ride.
Yeah.
They'll put a notice out to their customers. Listen, this Thursday we're doing a night ride. It's the first Thursday of the new month. We meet at the dealership at 5, so you've got a chance to meet with them, give them a tea or a coffee, a cool drink, and a bite to eat if need be.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll do a little outride. We used to go to Joburg Centre, to Arts on Main.
Mm-hmm.
We just found that was getting a bit done, should I say, month after month. Well, that was nice for catering for 150 to 200 people, because you could. It just got too much for us. So now myself and Clinton, scout different restaurants. And we try to find one that's got massive character or massive views or just – it's different that you wouldn't have known about.
Okay.
And so we all gathered there. So you leave from your various respective dealerships. You take a nice scenic ride, slow ride through Joburg. One of our favorite rides is obviously through Rosebank, through the zoo area, over Nelson Mandela Bridge, through Joburg Center, back out again, and then to our dinner venue. So every ride is different. And the idea there is come with a classic if you can. I don't want superbikes in because they want to go faster in first and we can do in sixth.
Yes.
But just come and enjoy the evening. Come with an open face helmet. Ride at 60 k's an hour. You're going to be in a big group. There's no wheelies or endos or craziness. And just enjoy Joburg for what it is at night. It's beautiful.
Okay, that sounds actually fantastic. It sounds like it's a massive, almost a social and almost cultural sort of experience.
What's the smallest bike? I'm curious.
Any bike. We've had Pasolas, we've had scooters, we've had anything. Yeah, any
so
bike
you don't leave anyone behind?
No, we don't leave anybody behind. We've got sweeps running through. It's not an organized ride where we've got marshals and policemen. Mm-hmm. We don't need that. We've got lead, mid-pack, and end-pack, and we'll tell you where we're going and how we're getting there, and the guys find their way there.
Mm. Well, that's great.
But nice and lazy.
Yeah.
No, it sounds good.
Bit, no, it does. Hey.
No, there's no rush to it because too often you're sitting there and you're either rushing to get work or you're rushing to get home.
Or you have this marshal shouting in your ear. Keep left.
Yeah, something of the sorts. And just to go out there and just, it sounds great, you know, just enjoying the bike for what it is. And I can liken it to the car culture and doing your typical sort of, not so much your breakfast run, but just, you know, just riding for the sake of riding and not necessarily riding for the sake of getting to a destination or you know, transport as such.
Mm-hmm. And socializing there. But I'm curious, I want to get back to one of something you mentioned earlier about your entry-level bikes. What do you consider? Because, I mean, the consumer want to know, what is an entry-level bike?
That depends on what your skill sets are, I imagine. You know, if you're an old rider, we used to ride at school, and you knew how to handle a motorcycle, then I would say today perhaps start in a 350, a 390, something 300-400 range, and then work your way up from then.
You see, now that's a valid point, because we discussed this earlier.
Yes, I
mean, through all this training and that we've been doing, I mean, you know that you can get a learner's now and you can jump on 1,000 with a learner's, which is just a written thing. It's nothing practical.
And you've done absolutely no practical training there to be able to understand, yes, like you say, brake usage, turning, and simple things, just watching where you're going in, or looking at where you want to go. You know, keeping the head up and looking at where you want to go makes a massive difference to the way that you corner. Instead of being this erratic carving away at the corner little bit by little bit by little bit, you know, look at the exit and you'll actually turn there a lot smoother and more
But
composed.
What was the big difference for you from the 600, for example, and the, was it the 300 that you were on?
Yeah.
Which one for you as an entry level was easier to manage?
Certainly the 300. Day and night.
So that's why... You know, I think this is important for people to know, entry level. If this is your first time, that is, like you say, what you should be looking at, 300, 390.
I can understand that you would tire of the power fairly quickly, you know, the power and the handling and the capabilities
of it. No. So now you've got big, powerful bike of a 600. You come to a robot and there's diesel there or there's sand there, and you pull front brakes because that's what you normally do, and you haven't seen the mess on the floor.
Yeah.
What's going to happen? You're going to fall. You're not going to save it with your foot.
No.
With a 300, sure, you haven't got the power, but it is so light, you can pick it up with one leg.
That's it.
So you're going to save, and trust me, you're not going to do it again. Next time you will smell that diesel or you'll see that sand before you get to it.
Mm.
But it gives you the opportunity to learn.
There's a huge advantage for entry-level riders to go for something like that for at least a year or two. I mean, you're saying it's a growing market. Mm. So would you, as someone that would now allow you to come and trade in them by you, do they lose value, the little bikes?
I'm calling
entry-level bikes.
Our 390 Duke is our best reselling bike.
See, so you understand what I'm saying?
So there's a good market for it as well for when you want to upgrade in that. No, I mean, I'm a proponent for it. I'll always advocate, you know, start on something smaller and manageable. Not too small, you know, because I believe that too small can cause just as much problem 100%. As what, you know, too big can. There is such a thing as being too slow for your situation. You know, if you're not flowing with traffic and you're just being a hazard, the chances of being smacked in the rear or
not. But then you're going to be a hazard on a 600 too, in my opinion.
Too fast, yeah.
No, absolutely, yes. No, agreed. So I would also say, sorry, go for the 300, the 320 like that, the one that we have been using in some of our training. And yes, absolutely lovely. But I can see it, and I see it from a car side of things as well. It's all good and well. The guy goes in and says, well, I'm looking for something quick and nimble, so I'm going to end up in a Suzuki Swift Sport or a Ford Fiesta ST. And after 6 months, they're sitting there saying, okay, well, now this feels neutered. I need something else. Mm. And they haven't really explored the entire car, enjoyed the entire car for a nice duration, you know, like lived with it for 2 years to get the true intrinsic feel of the vehicle and become one with it. They've just said, okay, well, now it's neutered, it's dumbed down, I'm so tired of the power, I want to move on to the next thing. And then it's a Golf R or an RS4 or something of the sorts, and it just gets bigger and bigger like that.
I think what Wilmer is saying is dead right. You know, people can go out and write a learner's license, which is a piece of paper. And they might not even be able to touch the ground on a CBR1000 or a BMW RR or whatever it might be. And that's assimilated to like an 18-year-old getting his license and being given a Ferrari.
Yeah.
Guaranteed he's going to crash it. It's only a matter of time. Mm. Not a case of when or where. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
And we've seen it before in the old dealership when we were a Kawasaki agent. We had a lot of new people coming in, new people into the biking market, and they wanted the ZX10 because it was the beast. Mm. It was the ultimate. And I actually turned a lot of people down and said, listen, you can't. One happened to get through me, and that bike was back in my shop at 110Ks.
Mm. Jeez. Yeah. Mm. No.
It is a matter of time, for sure.
It is, yeah. It's not a question of if, it's just a question of when.
In the car, you're just a little more protected, you know.
No, of course, yeah. And I suppose you tend to flex and rely on the car's power a little more here and, you know, on a more regular basis, let's put it that way. Full acceleration or full throttle acceleration considerably more often than what you would on a bike necessarily. And there's two complete differences in what full throttle on a bike is versus full throttle in a car. Mm. So no, I understand it. I do hear it. It's just, it's really sad that the guys don't spend enough time with the smaller bikes and just really get to know it properly, you know, and just hop over to
bringing you back to that ego thing we were talking about.
Once again, yeah, ego, mm. Hey, gets in the way.
Why did he want to buy a bike in the first place? Well, because all his friends have got. What have they got? No, they've got thousands. Mm. So for him to rock up with a 390 or a 400 just wouldn't look cool.
Yeah, it's not going to cut it, yeah.
But, I mean, I was saying when I was in Australia, mm-hmm. I don't know if there's any other countries that work like this, but, I mean, they're so good because they give you different color. I think it's different color number plates in that based on the amount of time you've spent in that car or on that bike. So you can't just jump, for example, let's say red is most experienced. You can't. You've got to work your time through. So, and they do that based on, so they give you, for example, a 300 only for a year. Just giving you an example. You can't jump to 1,000 unless you've done the year or the two. So I don't know the exact time frames in that, but that's, in my opinion, great. It forces them to go smaller for the first bit while they're still learning.
I think it's a fantastic system, but you just know that something it's like that is unmanageable and here. Won't work in South Africa. Mm. It's just almost impossible.
Again,
to
it's
sit
enforcing
there
this.
Enforce and regulate it. It just, I can't see that happening.
I have a question for you though, also from a buying point of view, because this was something that I didn't like a while back, is that people could buy a bike cash without showing your learners. Can you still do that? He's not answering.
There's a loophole.
Back to your license issue. The UK is exactly the same as Australia in that you have to work your way up. You get a license for a 150, a 250, a 500, a 600, a 750, and so forth.
You're not going to jump my question.
I know, I have just done that.
Just done that. You don't necessarily agree with it. From a retailer point of view, I can understand.
No, of course not. You know, each time I ride past an accident, be it a car or a motorbike, I cringe. You know, I really do. Yeah. Because people are seeing this and they're going, geez, motorbikes are going to be so dangerous.
Yeah.
And they're not.
They're not
motorbikes
the problem.
Are not the problem. Mm. It's the education of the people riding the motorcycles.
And the thing is, it's in your best interest to actually ensure that the person that you're selling the bike to has the credentials, has their training, has the experience. Because, hello people, you're creating a repeat customer.
Because or not.
If he comes back, because he can ride and he's enjoyed the bike, he's going to come back and he's going to trade it in on a different model or a larger model. He's going to scale up like we were just talking. But if you send a guy out there straight off the bat without the right training,
you might lose him forever.
There is a chance that you're never going to see him again, you know?
Anyone that's dealt with me or my team directly will tell you that we don't sell because we're selling. We sell because we believe it's the right bike for you. To the point that we've lost sales in the past because we wouldn't sell that person that specific bike and you go to our competitor, one of our other dealers, and buy it there. We're that strict in our manner that we don't do it.
Yeah, find that.
And you know what? I'll tip my hat to that because it's a commendable effort on your part to sit there and do the honorable thing and the humane thing and just sit there and look after that person's well-being. Mm. It's almost a social responsibility that you've taken upon yourself that sadly too many people don't have. It's the same way that we sit here with so many vehicles out on the road and they got the insurance because I needed insurance so that I could finance it. And as soon as the first installment goes off, cancel the insurance and they're running around. And that's why you see all these fancy BMWs and that and they wrecked and they dented and they crashed and they're running on bald tires in it because people can't afford to run it. They just overextending themselves and just have got no responsibility for anybody else out there. They're getting into an accident and if they're in an accident with you, terribly sorry, but I don't have insurance.
The sad reality there though is those manufacturers, and we all know who they are, they structure such deals to make it affordable that the lowest of the low income can afford their vehicles. But that's only on the monthly rate. They can't afford the vehicle plus the insurance plus the maintenance. So in the space of 2 or 3 years' time, they're still bound to that vehicle for another 2 or 3 years. And the vehicle it's a danger. The tires need replacing. The shocks are done. The brakes are done. It shouldn't be on the road. But because he has no other choice and he's bound to this vehicle, they're going to stick with it. And unfortunately, you're going to see those manufacturers are taking strain in about 10 years' time when it's the second cycle that has to come in. Because by then, the guys will have learnt. You know, they can't go back the same path they went to. And it wasn't so easy.
Vicious circle, though, because then they're sitting and they've already fallen into that ego trap. All my friends have seen me with X, Y, and Z German
now
mark.
Now you can't downscale.
I can't downscale to something small in Korean or small in Chinese. You know, they're going to think, what happened? Did he divorce? Did the wife walk away with half of everything? You know, did she get the house? What happened there? And then they've just fallen into the same trap with residual and balloon payments and that, and it's a never-ending debt cycle that they're just going to end up passing on to their kids.
Yeah, but if you look at the Consumer Protection Act and the new lending agreements,
yes,
you're bound by certain rules. And once you've been blacklisted, you're not going to get finance again. So they can't go back into that trap. So that's actually been put in place to stop that from happening.
Well, it's good to know that there is that sort of structure in place, that, you know, that somebody has had the vision to look at it in a long-term sense. I mean, the CPA has only been out for 2005, I think. It's almost exactly 5 years. And, yeah, we should maybe, we're probably going to start seeing that actually come to fruition now, where there's going to be a downturn in the new vehicle sales or just a shift in the buying patterns. Are you seeing a shift in buying patterns with the bikes and that, with the rand dollar?
Yeah, look, it's been a tough 6 months. Let's not kid. I think I'd be a liar if I sat and said it hasn't been hard. You know, by the grace of God, we've had exponential month on month since probably November last year.
Okay, fantastic.
And
I think
it's a flurry of spending before the price increases came in. So guys knew they could see it. I think a lot of our customer bases were sort of LSM 10, 12. They're your directors, your corporates. They understand what the market is doing. And they can see a bit into the future. So they're quite astute at what they do now to prepare themselves for the future.
Yeah, they can predict out in front and know that there's going to be some sort of value to it.
100%. Yeah. So yeah, the market has been tough. We've seen a lot more sales of used bikes, and we've seen our spare sales go up astronomically. So guys are holding on to their old bikes. But the market turns and changes. You know, we're a feel-good company. We often joke about it that people either turn to liquor or to narcotics to get their highs and their fun. In our market, people turn to motorcycles. It's what gives their endorphins a lift and it makes them feel good, you know. And they're all testosterone-driven people. They need that high to make themselves operate.
And don't think women... I know you're going to say something.
No.
Because women are too.
No, I can imagine. I mean, there's that meme floating around on social media as well. You know, raise your child with a motorbike addiction and they won't have money for drugs or alcohol.
100%.
True.
Yeah. A racing habit, you know, cars, anything else. And I know the feeling. I know the pain.
I just want to comment something on what Dave said. Remember we spoke earlier about how the car trends change also from secondhand to new.
To new,
depending.
Yes, yeah. People still buy. But it's just how they, it's just where they
spend
their money.
It goes through the phases and that. So currently, would you say the secondhand bike market is up on the new sales or is it?
It's tough because we're not getting secondhand bikes in. In order to us, you know, we need to sell new bikes to get trade-ins in. So yes, the market is ready for it, but the problem is we haven't got the stock for it. So that's what we're seeing spares and accessories and now being spent on because the guys are saying we're not spending 100 grand for a new bike this year, but we'll spend 20 on the motor and
to
20
fix.
On kit.
Okay.
To buy me another 2 years.
Yeah, to feel better for another 2 years. So yeah. Is that swinging roundabout?
So, okay, on that then, do you guys have like a service plan type of thing that you do?
On our road bikes, we do.
You do. Why not off-road?
Have you seen where they ride those things?
Yeah, it is a little tough. It's like you can insure it against theft, but you can't insure it against damage.
Or drowning it or something like that, hey?
And 9 times out of 10, inevitably they come in on a Monday, they go, I don't know what happened. I don't know, it just stopped running. And we turn the thing on his back stand and the water comes pouring out the exhaust and he goes, I don't know how that got there. Maybe it rained last night. I don't know.
Yeah, I know, it must have rained and it must have left all the fairings off and it must have gotten in the airbox. And then when I try to kick it this morning.
Okay, so that's why. Yeah. All right, so you do have one superbike, so.
Adventure bikes and superbikes, yes.
And your road-going bikes, your license.
Two year, how does that work? Yeah.
So it's a 2-year, 30,000 motor plan. As well as warranty and as well as roadside assist. So it's a comprehensive plan.
It's quite comprehensive for bikes, eh? And that is nice to know.
Roadside assist?
So countrywide.
Oh, really?
Backed by
fantastic.
The AA.
Okay. All right. So if you break down somewhere, hopefully not just a flat tire, then you guys, AA.
Even
coming.
A flat battery, a flat tire, ran out of petrol.
Everything.
Anything
they
you need.
Assist.
Roadside
they will come and
that's
help
very
you.
Nice, yeah. So adventure riders, if you are on the dirt path, push your bike to the road and call the
okay.
roadside assistance. You'll be fine.
Yeah, so how far will AA go? We should test that.
How far will AA go? What, off-road?
Yes.
I think they'd go anywhere, but it might take some time to get to you. So hopefully you've packed your baked beans and
but
your sleeping bag.
But have you ever actually tested it?
No, I hope never
let's
to have
do
to test it.
Yeah, you willingly want to do it. And here Dave's sitting saying, I hope I never have to test it.
No, he would. He's game for anything.
He knows where he rides. He knows that nothing can get there except a helicopter and him.
He needs time to recover, though. We're going to get back to that question just now.
We are. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to chat a little more about Rad
safety.
Motor. Safety. And we're also going to take a look. I want to talk a little Formula One. Oddly enough. I want to talk a little Formula that's a first. One. Yeah, that is a first, eh? And then we also have our review of the Range Rover Evoque. Wait, let me get the exact name here. I've forgotten about it. The 2016 Land Rover Range Rover Evoque SD4 SW1 Monochrome.
He drives so many, he forgets what's...
I do. It's already out of my mind. I had to go and relook at these stats and figures. I couldn't remember what power it made. But we'll be back right after this.
Choice. Sometimes you have it, and sometimes you don't. Auto Trader gives you the choice. Now you can shop, compare, and buy new cars. Watch our expert video reviews and research before you buy. Auto Trader New Car. The choice is yours.
Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on cliffcentral.com.
And we're back. So, yes, in studio here with Wilmarie Janssen van Rensburg and Dave Griffin, our DP of Rad Moto KTM. Out in, you're essentially still Rivonia, hey?
Sunning Hill Rivonia.
Sunning Hill Rivonia,
right,
yeah.
Right in the corner of the highway.
There we go. Yeah, you can't miss it. And I said that I wanted to talk Formula One. Now, of course, as we know, I don't really watch the Formula One, but it's been kind of hard to miss what's been going on. And of course, that's the Hamilton-Rosberg incident. Wilmarie, did you see it?
I didn't.
So you didn't see it?
You've caught me off guard.
Haven't you seen anything about it?
No, actually. Okay. I was like off the radar this weekend.
Well, Dave, then I'm in terrible company here because you didn't see it either. You were lying with like your legs in the air, stuck it's with your head in the sand.
Two wheels too basically. Two wheels too many.
Sorry. Okay, well, in short, there was a coming together just after turn four, or it was going into turn four in Spain, and teammates took each other out. Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton taking each other out. And it's been largely debated about who was at fault with the coming together.
This was now this weekend.
This was now this past weekend. And as a result, because both of them ended up out, we sat with the youngest ever driver to win a Formula One, Max Verstappen.
Oh, wow.
Weird thing. And half the field here has raced with his father. Josh Verstappen.
Come on, give credit where credit's due. Congrats to him. Give
yeah, well course. Done. There absolutely. Yeah, no, take nothing away from him. But yes, there were circumstances that
so
helped.
He's lying sixth now.
Overall.
Yes, overall. In the driver's standing.
Yeah,
no,
where have I got the, I've got the standings here? Because I think out in front is still... Rosberg is still out in front. He's 18 years old.
Wow.
Here's the scary bit.
That must have been exciting.
No. Here's the scary bit. He was born in 1998. Born in 1998. He was born after Jurassic Park came out. He was born in the year The Matrix came out.
And he came in nice standing.
He's just won a Formula One. I feel like ancient here. It's disturbing.
I wouldn't have thought of Jurassic Park, but okay.
You know, I'm just thinking of some films that came out there. It's a good way to pin it down. Granted, I was just finishing off school, but yes, I was finishing off school people and this kid was born. He's now winning Formula Ones. Yes, we're getting old. In any case, Rosberg leads the championship with 100 points. Hamilton drops to third. He's on 57 points. He's behind Raikkonen.
He must be hating that.
Well, listen, it's said that the two of them are not really talking to each other, Rosberg and Hamilton, that they understand that it's racing and they're going to keep it civil for the team because, you know, Mercedes is now sitting with their finger firmly wedged because neither of their cars scored points in this. And that hurts in a championship.
It's almost like the Yamaha thing, hey?
But you need to question who was at fault. Who was in front at the time? Who was leading? Who was in front?
Now, Rosberg was in front. Hamilton came round. Hamilton wanted to pass him on the right-hand side. The race line was on the left-hand side. It is a wide piece of tarmac. And as Hamilton came out, Rosberg just defended his line. And I'm going to sit there and I'm going to say that. Rosberg's in front. He doesn't have eyes. He's only got mirrors. Okay? He doesn't have eyes in the back of his car. He's only got mirrors. So his is the racing line. And coming from races, if somebody has that race line and you haven't made enough of an advance on him, he's entitled to essentially close the door on you,
correct?
No, but
hang on. Was he turning left and he pushed out to the right?
On the straight.
Okay, no, but no, then he's just being an idiot, in my opinion. Because
the rules allow you to defend your line.
Was it the race line?
It wasn't the race line.
It wasn't the race line.
It wasn't the race line.
So then he had to have known he was there.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying to you. So he intentionally pushed him out.
It's an intentional action.
Oh, no, yes. That's an intent. I'll go and say that it was an intentional action. I'm not going to sit there and pull an Oscar Pistorius and say, maybe he didn't know. No, I'm going to say he knew he was there and it was a defending of the race line. And the rules do allow for a singular defense of a race line. If he moves out to the right, all good and well to defend his, you know, to defend his position. He can defend his position once. If he had then moved back, then there would have been a problem and he would have been at fault.
But he took him out in the first defend.
Yes, and there needs to be, and this is now also in the rules where...
Too many rules, that's why I don't watch it.
Now, I'm going to get to that part. There was enough space to have one wheel on the track for Hamilton, which means that there was essentially enough space for him to be legal on the track. There's also justification. Now, the team boss is saying that he's not holding either driver. It's a racing incident. We're going to learn from it and go back and ensure that something like this doesn't happen because it hurts the team in terms of championship race. But he's not holding either of the drivers responsible for what happened there. Hamilton was clearly quicker. Rosberg was admittedly down on power as well. And yes, he probably knew this coming out of that turn. But I'm going to give him that benefit and say, see, he could have defended his line.
No, that brings me to the next point. Okay. Mm-hmm. If I know my horsepower is less than the one that's busy overtaking me, don't be an idiot because whether you block him now or later, you're going to have to do it the whole time. Just let him go, honestly. Because otherwise you're causing a hazard, which is exactly what happened now.
Mm.
Would you agree?
If he has more horsepower, it's only a matter of time before he gets past.
It is only a matter of time, but let him do it, you know.
The whole time. So he could have taken someone else out as well.
Well, with the differences in power, Hamilton was just going to streak out ahead. So it was a defense. I think it was just a poorly timed defense and a poorly timed attempt at a pass from Hamilton as well. Here's the big thing. We sit there and we say, ooh, okay, boring in procession and that. But all of a sudden, something exciting happens on a pass and we want to throw our toys out of the cot as well. No, people, this is what you've been asking for in Formula
One.
You've been asking for this excitement where teammates take each other out. You want Prost versus Senna, you know, barreling into the first corner wheel to wheel. You want this sort of stuff. And it's nice to see that there is a little bit of excitement going on. Don't hate on the guys. You know, yes, there are rules in place and that, but if there weren't, I think it would be a boring procession if he just let him go past.
Now,
I think that entire race would have been considerably less memorable.
Look, there's boring and then there's costly. I think that was just a very
costly
move. But
I'm not out of pocket. That's up to Mercedes.
I think that team manager is just doing the media thing and playing nice, but I think behind the scenes.
Oh, no, listen. Yeah, we're not hearing, game. No doubt, is a challenge
truth.
There. But in any case, all right, let's give you the podium there on that one. Max Verstappen out in front, Red Bull Racing, finishing and claiming 25 points there. Kimi Raikkonen behind him on the Ferrari and Sebastian Vettel in the Ferrari. Also read a very interesting interview between of Vettel discussing a pass maneuver by Daniel Ricciardo, the Australian who was in the Red Bull Racing. And also saying that at the time, he got over the microphone and was saying that, hey, if I hadn't avoided him, we would have been in a shunt and we would have both been out of the race and that. And then afterwards, he said, I'll take my hat off to Vettel for this one. He had the presence of mind to sit there and say, well, now that I've calmed down, I can analyze it differently and say that if I was in the same position as Ricciardo, I would have done exactly the same thing. That's what racing is. It's about going in there and taking these gaps. So in the heat of the moment, I didn't like it. But in hindsight, we're all smarter. So this is fantastic. You know, it was good racing. I'm glad nobody got hurt. And, you know, I can really commend the guy for that. I do enjoy him as a driver and as a personality. And I think that the man's got a nice future. So all the best for Sebastian Vettel there.
Do we know how much they get paid?
Too much.
No, really?
A lot.
I wouldn't ask our president though. He wouldn't get to the end of it.
No, he can't. Our president can't pronounce the salary.
Basically.
Facts. All right. Well, while we're on quickly, just give you a little bit of a rundown. Just going to chat about the Range Rover. Land Rover, Range Rover Evoque. SD4 SW1 monochrome. It's a real mouthful, but it's because it's actually a special edition. Now, I've always liked the way that the Range Rover Evoque has been styled. I thought, okay, it's nice. It's not really traditional in its sort of Range Rover, Land Rover sort of approach. It's a little more sporty, but I can like that. You know, I can learn to live with that. And the shape has grown on me, and it's surprisingly enough, you get these shapes that don't really age. You get certain vehicles that will age prematurely. The first generation Audi TT was one of those. Came out, it was fantastic to see it on the road. Now you see it and you're like, well, that's a 1998 design. It is quite clearly cut. The Range Rover Evoque doesn't seem to be aging much.
Don't you think they needed that to stay in the market?
Range
Rover's always been the queen's vehicle. It's been the
very calm,
selective vehicle for the more acquired taste. And I think that Evoque came in and blew it out to all the young mummies and their kids. It became a really amazing little car for them.
Absolutely, and especially as an entry level, you know, an entry point into Land Rover or Range Rover ownership, I think it was fantastic, and it just had that sort of style. And they went one up here, and they've taken one of the sort of entry-level models, the standard SD4 and in the pure spec. So the pure spec is missing a couple of things, but then they've given it this SW1, which is a London postal code sort of approach to things. So it's only available in grey, and then it has these white accents on it. It's got white trademark Union Jack treatments on the mirrors and on the rear wing, and then white stripes down the side, and it sits on 20-inch white alloy wheels. And it's quite a looker. It's that grey, black, and white. So, yes, in the video that I produced on that one, I did say that it's London sky grey, you know, and it's exactly the thing. It's sober fitting. You get it in the colour version as well, which is now the colours of the Union Jack. So that's got reds, whites, and blues in it. And Union Jack, American flag, hey, whichever way your bread's buttered, you can decide there. But only 50 of each of these models, and there was a third one brought in as well, and that, I think, was the SW8. Which is also a slightly more creative one, and that harked back to the creative area, SW8 being the very creative area in London. Abbey Road, of course, famous for the Beatles and the likes and the turning points. So they've all got these little character and little trademark details in them, and I think it really sets the car apart. The problem is you can't really buy this off the Land Rover floor anymore, because only 50 models were brought in, so you can only find it second hand. Now, where the standard SD4 comes in at just over 715,000 Rand, taking a look at one or two of the colors, I couldn't find a monochrome out on autotrader.co.za. I could only find a color. That one was going for about 800,000 Rand.
Ouch.
So it's already commanding a premium in the second-hand market because it is a limited edition. But what a fantastic way to just one-up your neighbors. Like I said, it's the pure edition. What's their alternative? Their alternative... I don't have their alternative. Prestige is their alternative. And so it's missing a couple of the key little things that make it an Evoque. Well, you're right there.
No, I'm sorry. I'm just... Carry on.
I don't even want to know what you're doing. I need to take a photo of this. We post it on Twitter. All right. So it's missing a couple of things. It's missing navigation, panoramic sunroof, electric tailgate, and electric seat adjustment. We also don't have HID lighting, which is, you know, a couple of those things really just make it that Range Rover experience. So it is a little weird to see that the thing didn't have electric seats, that it didn't have navigation. The auto tailgate, yes and no.
You know, for that kind of money, none of those.
Yeah, for that sort of money, you expect.
I'd like it to come with a driver too, if possible.
Yeah.
So, yes, yeah, I mean, it is. For that money. It's very expensive, but I tell you what, I found myself, and I don't want to say I didn't want to, but I really didn't think it was a sort of car that I was going to bond with or click with. So,
did you end up liking
it? I ended up liking it. I have no idea what you're doing here. You're going mining or something.
I'm turning it away for the noise.
Oh, for the noise. Okay. I ended up liking it a lot. It was a car that I really enjoyed climbing into. climbing into and driving. And I said, I don't know that I can justify the price, but I can live without these little creature comforts. Unfortunately, without those little creature comforts, which are becoming very standard in many, I don't want to say entry-level cars, but very consumer-orientated vehicles that are accessed by the masses, these sort of little creature comforts do date it in a way. You know, you'd say that you can climb into the new Opel Astra, which is marketed at the working class, and it is going to have navigation in it, and it is going to have connectivity and CarPlay, and it's going to have HID matrix headlights. It's going to have an electric seat in that, and to not have that on a Range Rover, yes, is a bit of a, ooh, that's, now it feels like just polishing an old model here. But
with 50 vehicles only in production, would you think it's a problem to sell them?
They haven't battled to sell them. They're already sold. They're already spoken for. So we managed to get hold of one of them and to test it. So the review is out there and is on the YouTube channel. And I like it because it was such a well-rounded vehicle. You know, it does 4x4 stuff beautifully. On the road, it's a pleasure. It's got the 9-speed gearbox, which is an absolute dream. And I didn't think it. I've had other... I'm not going to mention the manufacturer, but
so
other 9-speed gear... Yeah. I've had other 9-speed gearboxes that were absolutely atrocious, constantly hunting up and down. And this one was a pleasure to drive. It was an absolute treat. So I really enjoyed driving it. And, it was powered by the 2.2-litre diesel motor. So not overly powerful, 140 kilowatts to 420 newton meters of torque. It's only going to do the 0 to 108.5. So nothing to write home about in terms of performance. But it was a really enjoyable drive. And I like the little accessories and the little changes that they put on this monochrome one. Made it sort of stand out. And it still garnered a little bit of attention. And as I said, it's feminine and stylish enough that the wife can drive it, but not that feminine that I feel embarrassed driving it. So there was still a butch masculine sort of approach.
I was going to ask you if you would like, if you would be seen in one.
I've always liked them. Most people, I think they're great vehicles.
I love the Evoque.
It's a very trendy vehicle, and I don't think it was the ego speaking, wanting to be seen in a Range Rover. I just really enjoyed it. I love the way that it sat. I just love the interior. I love the way that the interior was finished and designed. It really just felt like a fantastic place to spend time. Comfortable.
He's an interior man.
I'm an interior guy. We all know this now. And it really was. It was pleasantly surprising. I would like to see it in a higher spec level. But yeah, I'm not going to shun them entirely. You know, I'll give them the time of day and a little bit of respect and say they may possibly even warrant the price tag. That review is out. It is available on autotrader.co.za and on our YouTube channel. Go and subscribe to our YouTube channel, because we try to get a new video out every Monday for you, so that it's almost like waiting for Game of Thrones. Sitting there, ooh, Monday comes, new video time. So we're going to try for that. Go and subscribe to our YouTube channel. And we've got a couple of interesting ones coming up. We've got a nice big family test coming.
Oh, interesting.
Three vehicles, all in the same range, same manufacturer, and just going from small motor to the medium motor to the big motor and comparing all of those. So that one's coming up, and I'm not going to give away too much. Keep it a bit of a surprise. In the next couple of weeks, you'll see that one on our YouTube channel. All right, what have we got coming up?
I want to get back to the safety side with Dave. Because you guys do, you said earlier, you mentioned that you do training as well. What is the training that you focus on for your customer base? Is it new? Is it current? Is it old?
Most of our training that I'm comfortable doing is on the track. So we'll take customers out there with their road bike or their adventure bike, and we'll teach them where to look going through a corner. Things like where to look out for sand, dirt, oil, that kind of stuff on the road. Many customers will get a bike and they're not comfortable riding that bike. So they're scared to make quick movements or grab a handful of brakes or accelerate hard. So we really want to take them and say, listen, get used to your bike. Yeah. Be comfortable on your bike. That's going to prepare you for anything that happens on the road. Then for more sort of in-depth training, I'd refer them to someone like Speed Queen Racing or Andy, who can spend a day with them one-on-one. We simply don't have the time. We'll take 15 guys and we'll do a road riding school. We'll take them to Pakisa. Normally we do a track day at Pakisa. Then the next weekend we'll take them to Sabi, Hazy View, White River, and we'll ride the roads there. And we'll stop at the end of each road and say, okay, did you see this? Don't forget to look for this.
So basics in it. So it's practical training on hand while you guys are there. Mixed with a bit of social, and if they need more time, then you basically send them to the necessary places.
Well, we wouldn't take them there unless they were sort of a 8, 9, 10 type of rider, someone that was confident on the bike already. We're taking people there that might ride too fast for their ability. So we're actually bringing them back a bit to say, listen, you think you're a 10 rider, but come and ride with us and we'll show you that you're actually a 7 rider because you're not looking for these things. If someone's a 1, 2, 3, 4 rider, we would send them to a professional that's going to spend one-on-one time with them.
Okay. Well, that's very good to know. So from a safety point of view, seeing that you're now in that seat at the moment, would one thing that, especially in the off-road, I think in the off-road industry, you're a specialist in that. I mean, you ride exceptionally well. Something that has happened to you that you've learned that saved your life, that you can tell the person out there, this is what to do or not?
In an off-road environment, like an adventure type of environment?
Correct.
Sure, there's so many.
I mean, if I can go too quickly on the road bike side, something that comes up often with us when we teach is people ask, what do I do if I get a tank slap? I mean, that's a head shake. Let's call it slang language for that. The misconception is to shut off completely, instantly. It's the worst thing you can do.
Yeah, putting all the weight on the front wheel.
Instantly.
Great move.
Plus, that's not even to mention about who can come up the backside, etc. You've got to keep it consistent, if not accelerate out of it. What kind of tip like that would you give for an off-road rider?
I think for me as an off-road rider, the vanishing point is very important. So if you're coming on a mountain pass, the vanishing point is the longest point you can see into a corner. And if you're at speed and off-road 60 k's an hour is pretty quick, if you come through a corner, you notice your vanishing point is tightening up. You need to expect that corner is going to tighten up.
And slow down.
And either you slow down or you're not going to make the corner. You know, gullies are an important thing if you're running next to a mountain pass. Water gullies that come down, they wash the road away. So there's so much one can take into it. But the best thing is, if you want to learn more, come and join us for a ride and we'll take you through it all.
Awesome.
All right. Well, Dave, I want to say thank you very much for joining us. It's been absolutely pleasure having you. Absolute pleasure. Let me get my English right. Absolute pleasure having you in studio, and love hearing about Rad and the Rides and that you do. I want to thank everybody for joining us and listening or downloading the podcast. Please join us on the social media channels. That's AutoTraderSA on Facebook, Twitter, and the likes. Use the hashtag AutoCentral if you want to get in on the conversation. Big thank you to Wilmarie Janssen van Rensburg for joining us.
Thank you, SA Speed Queen.
And Dave, thank you very much. We
thank
hope
you,
to work with you in the future soon. From me, Chad Lookoff, and the rest of us at autotrader.co.za, please keep upright and keep the shiny side up.
Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.
The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.